Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the After Show with Mike and Kelly. I am Mike, and I'm joined by Kelly. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Happy 2015, everybody. We've been on a brief holiday hiatus lasting the majority of the month of December, and we are back getting our act together, getting our show back on the road, and thrilled to be here. It's a big night media-wise. We have the Golden Globes going on as we record this. Congratulations to all the winners and the losers, because there are no losers. It's an honor just to be nominated. Anyway, I was pleased to see Maggie Gyllenhaal won for one of her series. Jeffrey Tambor won for his role in Transparent, which is fantastic.
So good.
And just as we started recording, Richard Linklater won for Boyhood, which is a movie I can say that I have seen this year, and I was quite impressed. So I'm impressed basically when anybody is able to do anything that requires having a plan for 12 years. It's, you know, My ADD brain does not understand your complex Earth planning.
I'm totally, like, for me, I was in awe just that it was a thing. You know, even if he'd only made it like 2 years, I still would have been like, wow.
I know. He got it together. He had his shit together for an extended period of time. That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And then to continue to have it together was just the part that sort of blew me away, you know.
I mean, I think, frankly, if we only had to record the podcast once a year for 2 weeks straight, I think we might have a better adherence to our schedule. That would be a long podcast. 2 weeks solid would be long.
but
what?
But we'd totally have them.
We'd totally do them. We also have the Portland Trailblazers playing the Los Angeles Lakers this evening.
So
Kelly is a Twitter.
Beat LA.
Yeah, it's hard for me as a New York fan right now to get excited about someone else's basketball Jones, I have to admit.
I can completely understand.
Because the Knicks are in the midst of an epic collapse.
Like, it's amazing.
It really is. And in fact, Phil Jackson, the Zen master, found himself compelled to apologize for the team's performance. So Phil Jackson said, sorry, New York fans, you deserve better than this. And if that don't just, you know, slice the bacon.
Oh, truly.
I don't know what does. So anyway, how are you doing?
I'm good. My Seahawks are in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Portland's been wiping the floor with teams left and right, which has been pretty awesome.
You had a little holiday excursion down Disneyland way, as I understand it.
I did. It was due to timing. It was actually my momentous birthday trip, which ended up including some time at Disneyland, but also some time in Las Vegas, where my mom and my brother live.
Wow!
So I got to see them, and we rented a car and drove to LA. And then did the Disneyland thing for a while, came back and did Christmas with my mom, my stepdad, and my brother. And we took my mom to see The Hobbit for her part of her Christmas gift. The Christmas gift to my stepdad was that we left him home because he has zero interest in those movies. And we felt bad that my mom kept having to go by herself. So she got to go with Mr. Kelly and I and my brother.
Nice.
And we actually let's try that again. We actually fibbed about it because my brother said, oh, we have to do Christmas dinner early because I have to go to work. But in actuality, he didn't have to go to work. He had a hot date with some hobbits. So we actually
– Yeah.
Oh, there's a show title for you.
Yeah, so, hot date with some hobbits.
So he actually gets to go with us, which was a lot of fun. And then he also got a MacBook Pro for Christmas this year, and part of my gift to him was getting it all set up and his admin password all worked out and, you know, walking through the setup process. So really all he had to do was open it and go.
It's funny because all my family and friends – Mac configuration has been post holidays. I've just this week helped my friend Juliet with her new MacBook Pro. I got upsold. It's never happened to me before.
What?
I don't take it personally, but we went to TechServe, to our friends at TechServe. TechServe, the Mac and Apple superstore in New York City, independent for over 25 years.
Yeah, they've been around. I was going to say they've been around a long time.
They are not a sponsor yet. No. not yet a sponsor of TechServe, but. Went with my friend Juliet to TechServe, and she said, I have a 2008 vintage MacBook. It's time for me to upgrade.
I have one of those. That's actually my backup machine. Like,
oh yeah,
if the mine black fails, I have the.
Yeah, the BlackBook, the Core 2 Duo BlackBook, and that's the and they're tanks. They run forever, but they don't run the new stuff. And she said, I want to upgrade. And she travels a lot for work. She goes to all sorts of exotic locations, and so we agreed pre-trip that what she wanted was a MacBook Air.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's, we talked about it. We worked through it. We decided, and we got to the store, and the strangest thing happened, which was the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro.
Oh,
the store associate was, you know, she's like, look, you're for the same price, you're getting the Retina screen, you're getting a processor bump, and it's a half pound heavier and essentially the same form factor, just, you know, thicker.
Yeah.
But not all that much heavier. And I was like, wow, you know, that's a really interesting point. And then the thing about comparing Retina to non-Retina, of course, side by side, is that Retina just brushes it off its shoulders. Like, oh, you know, 1400 by 900, 1440 by 900. That's so quaint. Mm-hmm. How adorable that you think that you can actually stand up
at that resolution. Yeah,
to this gorgeousness. Yes. Mm-hmm. So she got upsold. She ended up with the 13-inch Pro.
All right.
Retina Pro, which I completely did not see coming. And so now I've been working with her to get configured. And I had a long call with my cousin in Portland.
Oh, yeah,
My cousin Alyssa in Portland yesterday, who is having her iMac, is having internet troubles. And it turned out that she was flopping between her wireless network and her neighbor's wireless network.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah, which is apparently causing some of the trouble. So anyway, getting people backed up, getting them configured, getting them upgraded, it's all been happening since the holiday break, possibly because people are, you know, taking their tax refunds and their Christmas bonds, and they're going and buying themselves the Macs.
Yeah.
Anywho, but you had a good time in Vegas. You had Christmas in Vegas, and you managed to dodge the Disneyland plague. So good.
Oh man, did I? So here's the bonus to this story is that I write at Mac Observer, and Adam Christensen of MacCast fame is one of the folks over at Mac Observer, and he lives in San Diego. And I said, hey, I'm going to be in LA and da da da, and I'm going to be gone. Like, you know, here's what I'm up to while other things are happening. And Adam said, you know, that's not like it's far. Like, if you wanted to hang out. And I'm like, I totally want to hang out. I would absolutely like to hang out. So he met us on one of the days that we were at Disneyland, which happened to be one of the days during the week of the measles outbreak at Disneyland. Right. So I would like to, I've done this on Facebook, but I'm going to do it publicly. I would like to thank my mom and Adam's mom and Mr. Kelly's mom for being moms who were reasonable human beings in the 70s and said, you know what? You need shots because a measles shot is a thing that you should have. So you're going to have it. And did. So thank you for that, because in the olden days when I was getting immunized and didn't have a choice in the matter, nobody thought you caught anything from your vaccinations. They thought they just protected you, which is a pretty reasonable approach. Therefore, I didn't get measles when I was at Disneyland with all of those people who got sick because they didn't get vaccinated. So thanks for that, Mom. I appreciate it. And I'm sure Adam appreciates it and would thank his mom. And I would like to thank my mother-in-law for also having the sense to be a mom in the 70s and make sure we had our shots.
Be a Mom in the 70s is now the title of the show. So okay. I'm not sure how iTunes will process that. But now, did you say you had some show news some news you want to share on the show today?
I do.
Ooh, well, let's get to that.
Well, now that everything is signed, I can go ahead and kick off. I am the social media coordinator for Smile Software.
What?
I know.
That's so exciting. Smile Software, for those of our listeners who, I doubt there are any of our listeners who don't know this.
Don't listen to any other podcasts who don't know who they are.
Both of you might realize this. But Smile Software, the publishers of Text Expander, of PDF Pen, of a number.
PDF Pen Scan Plus, which is the one that lets you take pictures of documents with your phone or your iPad and turn them into PDFs, which is beautiful. And then PDF Pen lets you mark them up. Yeah, they make some awesome stuff.
So Smile was also the home, the professional home of your partner in crime for AppCamp.
Yeah.
Jean McDonald
who was a founder.
She was a founder of Smile Software, and she has now gone to do AppCamp full time.
Yep.
So you are picking up some of the marketing slack over there in Smile Land.
I am. I'm super pumped.
Oh, that is so exciting. That's a fantastic gig.
Yeah. I'm super excited. So, yeah. So well, if your social media needs managing, you should give me a call.
well, and what could be a better place to manage social media than a software company named after everyone's favorite facial expression?
Exactly.
Which is, you know, Frown Software, very, very brief tenure.
Yeah, they didn't last very long. Yeah.
They were not around for very long. Well, that's great. It is very exciting to see that the Hire Kelly hashtag has finally borne fruit.
Yes. Now, I don't have the day job yet, but if I can do another one or two of these sorts of setups, then I won't have to. And that's, for me, the very exciting part. So,
yay.
Yes. Right. Super excited.
Listeners, you can congratulate Kelly at Verso and send her your thumbs ups and your stickers and your vines and whatever else the kids are doing nowadays. So, we're gonna try to get back into the swing of things over the next couple of weeks and get into more of a rhythm. The thing that sort of 800-pound gorilla-ing over the technology landscape. Well, there's two things that have been 800-pound gorilla-ing. Gorilla-ing? Is that even a verb?
Gorilla-ring, yes.
Gorilla-ring. Welcome to Gorilla-ring, the web ring for fans of gorillas. Remember web rings?
Web
Remember
ring,
those?
Oh, my God.
Be a mom in the 80s. Have a web ring. Somebody was talking about Gopher and Waze not too long ago. I said, "Wow,
oh
man, you must be as old as I am."
And it wasn't me.
No,
I make that joke all the time. Okay,
it was someone else. So the big 800-pound gorilla, of course, is CES and the recently completed CES. And I will admit to a certain degree of CES blindness. I did not pay a lot of attention this year. Partly because I had the privilege not to, knowing sort of in advance there wasn't going to be a whole lot that I was interested in. Mm-hmm. I am glad that friend of the show, Ross Rubin, was out there and had a couple of announcements around his site, BackerJack, and he's doing some analytics. He's also doing a podcast now with our friend and colleague, Steve Sandy. So I'm excited that they got that. I feel I midwifed that a little bit because Ross did come to me and said, Who could I do a podcast with? And I said, well, you know, you could do it with Steve or with me, but you could do it with Steve.
Yeah.
And I think he made the right choice, frankly.
Yeah.
But I'm curious if you had anything that you saw at CES that said to you, you know, this is the awesomeness I was waiting for.
No. So I'm in writing for Mac Observer, like Mac Observer sent a contingent this year because Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin and Dave Hamilton all went to the show. So they were all on the ground in Vegas. Oddly, they saw nowhere near the amount of Elvis that I'm used to seeing in Vegas, but that's a story for another day. Because we can talk about that news, too, later if things get completely silly. So the thing that I saw – here's the thing is I didn't see anything that made me go, ooh, like, you know, I'm really over – the ginormous television. I'm really over the skinny television. I don't care if the television is curved. I don't care if the television is 3D. I don't care about any of those things. The thing to me that was really interesting, and this sounds goofy, and I've said it before, and you know, I kind of get laughed at, but the thing that was interesting to me this year was light bulbs, because everybody is looking at a light bulb as a way to do something differently. So I think it's Misfit who makes the Misfit Shine, which is one of the flavors of Fitness Tracker available to you. The Misfit Shine will track your sleep. And I'm not very good at describing sleep cycles, but there's like the when you are at your deepest sleep, and then there's when you're at your not deepest sleep. I don't know what you call it, but...
Light sleep.
Light sleep. Okay. So when you're at your lightest sleep and you have these cycles and you cycle through, you go from deep sleep to light sleep to deep sleep to light sleep throughout the course of the evening, of the night, as you're asleep. And so what the Misfit Shine does is they amp up that thing that a lot of sort of sleep cycle apps have done in a mobile app where, like, you put the phone in your pillowcase. And then when it determines, based on the amount of motion, that you are at your lightest sleep, then it will start to wake you up so that you wake up at your lightest and not with the blaring of the alarm at the same time every day. So if you're at your lightest sleep a little bit before your alarm's supposed to go off, then you actually get woken up then. And a lot of people swear by this and say that it's a fantastic way to do things. So Misfit is now linking their fitness tracker to a light bulb. Hmm. And when you are at your lightest, then the light will start to come on. The light bulb will turn on and fade in. It's LED, so it's adjustable in dimness and brightness. And it will get brighter, and that will be part of what helps wake you up, is you now have light as well as the vibration of the alarm or whatever in order to wake you up. So that seems really cool. Someone else, I'm not going to remember the name of the company, but somebody is doing LED light bulbs that have a Wi-Fi range extender in the base.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Right?
That's a great idea.
I was like, wow, I can't believe it took this long for somebody to have to do this, and that I've had this ugly wall wart thing that I've had to set up and configure and, you know, alternately kick and swear at when it's not working like it's supposed to.
I just finally got my Almond Plus router, which I fully expect to have enough power to kill mosquitoes within a 5-foot radius.
Nice.
So I won't need range extenders anymore. My entire house will glow with gorgeous Wi-Fi, like a light Cherenkov radiation blue. But anyway, yes, that's a great idea. Putting those in the bulb bases is fantastic.
And there was a number of people who were also just sort of putting out their own LED light bulb you can run with your phone. And the reason that makes me happy is because when there are more of these, then people will have to compete. And then if, say, my mom, for example, wants the light bulb in her hallway to come on when she gets home, or, well, she comes in through the garage because she parks in the garage. So if she wants the bulb in the garage door, the garage entry area, to come on when she pulls into the garage, she can make that happen. And it's not the $180 investment in Philips Hue, which is three bulbs and a hub and all this, and they change color, and she doesn't care about any of that. She just wants a light that comes on when she comes home. The end.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Nest announced, see, I'm a home automation nerd, and so this was the part that was really exciting to me. There was also a lot of wearable stuff there, but wearables have really become variations on a theme at this point. You know, we track stuff and you stick it on your arm. You can't go a lot further with that. Nest announced a bunch of integration with other things like Philips Hue bulbs and some of the other, I think, Wemo and some other home automation stuff, so that, you know, when the Nest does get turned down, you know, that kind of stuff will cause a chain reaction of other things. So when you set the Nest to bedtime, then the other lights in the house get turned off, and, you know, this happens and that happens. Or in the morning, you know, when it goes up a few degrees, maybe, you know, it kicks off the Wemo, which is connected to the hot water dispenser. Like at my house, that would be awesome, because then when I'm out of the shower, there's tea, I'm happy. So that kind of stuff to me is really interesting, because it's sort of showing that everybody understands they're not the only game in town anymore, which means once they all work together, then nobody has to have the experience I had setting up the home automation hub at my house, which was not, there was basically no UI design put into it. It's really ugly. It's really complicated. None of the stuff you want to have, you want is where you need it. None of the documentation is in English. None of the people you talk to, if you need help, are people who speak English. You really have to go to the forums and hope that someone else had the problem that you have, who was smart enough to be able to, like, decompile the code, take a look around, and say, this is how you solve the problem that you're having. That's what you had to do with the home automation hub I have set up. So the fact that this kind of stuff doesn't have to happen to people anymore makes me really happy, because the little things, like when I come home, the lights come on, so I don't ever have to walk into the house in the dark, no matter what, is awesome to me. being able to automate some of the stuff, like I said, like I get up, I take a shower, when I come down, the water's hot. If I want coffee, I can have coffee and I'm good. That kind of stuff is really exciting to me because I'm kind of a nerd for that. But also things like being able to turn the lights on and off while we were in Disneyland so that it looked like there were people home. That was pretty cool.
And projecting shadows of Donald and Goofy on the walls, too. So.
No, we haven't gotten to the projection stuff. That comes later. But we did some pretty sweet Philips Hue strip LED lights with a couple of apps and played some music and different things for Christmas. So that was pretty cool. But I think for me, the thing about it is that the barrier of entry gets lower and lower with this stuff all the time. Some of the light bulbs, you can run them with your phone, with an app, and they don't even need a hub anymore, which is this little piece of hardware that you have to stash somewhere that has to be able to get to the Wi-Fi so that it can communicate with everything. And some of the light bulbs now don't even need that. They have enough smarts inside them that you just address the bulb directly, which is great. I think it's really kind of at a point right now with evolution. I'm still not sure that 4K is there yet. I think if you are a television nerd, if you're an AV person, if you have an account over at AVS Forum and, you know, you're a person who contributes to the official thread on various models of television, you already have a 4K TV and you don't care that it costs more than your kid's car. And you don't, you know, you're doing all of that because you know the content's going to come to you.
Right.
And I think content is where this battle is going to be won and lost because, you know, with 3D it was lost. And I'm waiting to see if they can win the 4K battle because I know Netflix has some stuff. You still can't buy stuff in 4K on DVD at any, like in any flavor of disc right now. There's no disc that you can get that has 4K on it. I don't think.
No, you have to go Blu-ray and upscale, and
yeah.
which is very lovely. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it looks okay. Not,
yeah.
I mean, you can see the upscale if you have a television of an appreciable size. So I'm curious how this is all going to shake out because I just don't see it. And, like, you know, Dish Network's, like, the only one that's broadcasting anything in 4K, and that's still going to be upsampled. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm waiting to see how all of that's going to shake out. But that was sort of my thing. CES was like, light bulbs are awesome again, and I just love what people are trying to do with them. So
I think light bulbs are awesome. I mean – light bulbs are awesome. Automation and connected devices are awesome. But it was interesting to see some of the stuff that was happening with plain old television service POTS, the other POTS.
Yeah.
And actually, since you mentioned Dish, one of the most interesting – I am a Dish customer, so I'm always interested to see what they're up to.
Uh-huh.
And they have taken their Sling – they're taking their Sling brand, the Sling Box technology, which was originally an independent company that Dish had invested in, bought by Dish. Now the Sling Box is actually part of Dish's Hopper receivers. So just this evening, I helped friends – some – Friends FWOTV, Friends Without Televisions, whose teenage daughter really, really wanted to watch the Golden Globes. And I signed them into my Dish Anywhere Sling account so that they are effectively watching my satellite box from across Brooklyn. Don't tell the Dish people. Not yet a sponsor, Dish Networks. But what Dish is doing with Sling TV, which they announced at CES and is coming this month, is a $20 a month streaming service that is over the top. So it is not requiring an actual cable or satellite subscription. Now, of course, if you already have a Dish subscription, you can stream most of these channels live either through the Dish Anywhere app or through their own individual apps, watch TNT, watch ESPN, et cetera. But the live sports component with ESPN and ESPN2 and the fact that it's going to work with most streaming devices, not the Apple TV yet, but almost all the others, including the Amazon Fire and Fire Stick. I have a Fire Stick that is hanging off one of my HDMI switcher right now, and I think I've used it once. Hmm. But I've informed the family. I've said, look, I may have to have a second conversation with my wife. It's like, look, you don't have to stream Amazon Prime Video from your iPad anymore. We can now get it directly on the TV.
Yeah.
But I'm so short of HDMI ports right now that that's actually, by the way, the only reason I would get a new TV right now is to get one with four HDMI inputs as opposed to the two today. But that is a big deal for Dish because they are going to, you know, they're going to make a case for cord cutters who are sports fans who are depending on existing subscriptions that they can start to think about going over the top.
And sports has been the key the entire time. Like, as soon as you can get – basically, as soon as you can get basketball and football and baseball without –
And curling. Don't forget curling.
Well, these are the big three. And I know there's a rabid curling contingent, but it's not necessarily the largest – of contingents. They're just probably the most rabid. But they...
because of the ice weasels. I mean, that's why the curling fans are rabid. It's because of the ice weasels who infest the curling lanes and occasionally bite players. That's where the whole trope of the rabid curler comes from, is the ice weasels. But anyway, sorry. So, didn't mean to take us on a little ice weasel trip.
But
there.
It was lovely.
Yep.
And what a scenic ice weasel trip it was. So the thing that to me is interesting about it is that they've managed to put together this package and been able to appeal to a lot of people because they've got the ESPN and all that. So even if you're not somebody who necessarily wants to sit through the entire ball game, you know, at least you'll be able to get the highlights on SportsCenter, you know, RIP Stuart Scott. But, for example, if you wanted to see the highlights of the game that is going on right now, which is 49-50, Portland beat LA, then you could do that. You would get the highlights on SportsCenter, and at least if it's not a game that you get, you know, like if you're a baseball person but you have some interest in the other two, you can still get that stuff. And I'm pleased to see that this stuff is actually happening and that somebody's trying to work it out. So good on Dish for taking a crack at this and seeing if it's something that they can solve. Because if they can, like, they can only gain customers from a move like this. Nobody's going to get mad and quit Dish because this is what they're doing. Like, this is not going to happen. So
they've been pushing the envelope for quite a bit. I mean, I don't know if you remember a couple years ago the controversy over the Hopper.
Oh yeah,
which was the first provider sourced DVR. That had originally they had a skip forward originally came with TiVo and with the Replay TV.
Yeah.
But then
it's a hack. You have to put a secret code into your remote. I have a TiVo. You have to enter a secret code with your remote in order to get 30-second skip. You get four or five seconds otherwise.
Which is lame. But not only does the Dish Hopper give you essentially customizable on the fly skip by double pressing or triple pressing the forward skip button. You get 30 seconds, a minute 30. But it also has the hop feature where if you wait, so it records prime time. There's a lot in the stack here. So
First of all, everything is available for the last week of primetime viewing, whatever channel it was.
Primetime anytime captures the four big networks or five big networks or however many there are. But the primetime lineup is saved for a week automatically. So you're essentially dedicating one of your three tuners to do that every night.
Right.
But it gets all of them.
Mm.
And those programs, anything that is recorded off the networks, if you wait – it passed, you know, 3 a.m. to watch it. If you watch it the next day, you can automagically skip the commercials.
Ooh.
It will simply skip them. You're not having to fast forward or press forward skip. It just skips them. And that is a major up yours to ye old content providers. So Dish has not proven itself afraid to
kick a beehive.
Kick a beehive, pull the bear's tail, mess with a serious metaphor, whatever.
awesome.
So they've been playing this game for a bit, but this is another this one obviously is a is a more cooperative, collaborative effort. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I don't want us to run completely out of time tonight. And I think probably this is something where if we can touch on it tonight and then maybe mm-hmm. pull ahead a little bit and address it in more detail next week.
Yeah.
But other than CES, the other 800-pound gorilla in the room over the past week or so has been the perceived slippage, the downfall of quality control,
mm-hmm.
Down Cupertino way.
Yep.
The quality no longer being job one. So for, I'm sure again, everyone, I should be a little bit more aware of our audience and not have to explain certain things. However, just in case,
right.
You missed it. Within the past couple of weeks, this kicked off with a more in sorrow than in anger blog post from Marco Arment
mm-hmm.
about the his
the
perception
state of Cupertino, basically
the state of Apple's stack, the state of Apple's hardware and software, and that between iOS 8, Yosemite, iCloud, and several other pieces of the ecosystem that mm-hmm. Apple's building. Things were not working the way they were supposed to. In particular, Yosemite, Marco felt Yosemite just was broken in ways that were not acceptable, or that he felt that the effort to put in the quality had not been there, and that Apple was burning goodwill. And this was perceived, as a very sort of strident statement. Now,
well, outside of the community, it was turned into Apple fans are turning on Apple and like expect Cupertino to be overrun with nerds wielding torches and pitchfork apps on their phones at any moment. Like that was how they made it sound.
And that was part of that perception, was that the false notion that fan bloggers never criticize Apple.
Precisely.
And never have anything bad to say. Now, I also think, this is my personal perspective, I think that this idea, oh my God, everything sucks and nobody's happy, people don't remember how crappy things have occasionally been.
Right.
Or maybe they're just, they the memories of that have faded with time. But there have certainly been other times when Apple's software and services mm-hmm. or Apple's hardware were not living up to the brand promise of it just works.
Suboptimal.
But that's where I think this particular controversy has gotten some traction, a little Velcro on it.
But because I think part it, it of was the reason about, for that was because of the sort of trifecta of a bunch of iCloud functionality that really isn't operating as advertised, and it was supposed to come with OS 8, with iOS 8. I keep calling it OS 8. guess how long I've been around. You know, with like iOS 8 was still kind of rough around the edges, and then Yosemite was really rough around the edges, and all the stuff that was supposed to work together, like you couldn't really do a lot of the stuff that was good in iOS 8 until your computer was updated and your computer couldn't get updated. And then like Yosemite was finally released, and even after letting a million people beta test Yosemite, like there's still a lot of stuff that's wrong with it. Even to this day, there are people who are like, my Wi-Fi connection drives me insane. My troubleshooting, you know, every troubleshooting option I have exhausted. And now the solution to my Wi-Fi issues in Yosemite are either Mavericks or an Ethernet cable. And for some people, that's really what it's come down to. And I think it's just a matter of all of this having happened in rapid succession.
Yeah. And I think that it was the number of perceived issues.
Mm-hmm.
The scale of them, and I think that it there within every complaint there's a grain of truth. Within every mm-hmm. Every person saying, you know, iOS 8 sucks or Yosemite sucks or everything sucks,
mm-hmm.
there's a grain of truth. And also something that this is something I struggle with personally, which is validating someone else's experience. Not, you know, if they say I'm having this problem, not immediately going to, well, you know, I'm not having that problem, therefore the problem.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Avoiding the works for me factor. You know, it is possible to be compassionate about someone else's issues, even if you don't necessarily believe those issues are widespread or universal.
Right.
Because sometimes pipcac, sometimes the problem is between the chair and the keyboard.
Yes.
Sometimes it's perceived as a system issue and it's really not. It's third-party software. I'm not even immune to that. I had a problem earlier this week where I thought, this MacBook Air in Yosemite runs so hot and the fan's always running. And I was talking to somebody else. He said, the fan's always running. And then when I looked at what was actually happening, I had two pieces of third-party software that were fighting.
Mm-hmm.
VMware was trying to put something in the menu bar. Bartender, which I run to keep my menu bar organized, was knocking it down.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept happening over and over again. So no surprise that the fans were going crazy because this rather hefty menu bar add-on was trying to launch over and over and over again every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And as soon as I resolved that,
mm-hmm.
my machine was much happier.
Yes.
So it's not always something that is, air quote, Apple's fault.
Right.
However.
But I think what it is the shift.
Yes. It is the perception that it just works is no longer the watchword. And
right.
that things are just going to work is no longer the overriding consumer experience that Apple's going for.
Right.
Glenn Fleischman, mm-hmm. our friend Glenn Fleischman, has a great post sort of summing this up on his blog.
Mm-hmm.
And, he notes that Marco originally wrote this post and then rather quickly regretted it because mm-hmm. it got completely out of hand.
Right.
But then he sort of goes through the list of gripes. And again, whether or not these all apply to an individual person is a little bit beside the point.
Right.
Is that folks who are experienced users who have a lot of time and title with the platform, who know what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
are finding themselves either having to resolve multiple issues for their own setups, mm-hmm. or they're having to support friends and family in fixing their setups.
Right.
And the combination of those is a bit of a canary in the coal mine because it says, there's potential issues ahead. Now, there have been over the week or so since this happened,
mm-hmm.
There have been a number of people, some of whom in a position to know what's going on, who have said, you know what? Yes, we understand this is an issue, but there are really, really smart people inside Apple's software engineering organization who also know where the issues are and
mm-hmm.
don't assume because this seems to be getting out of control that it actually is getting out of control.
Right. And I think it's just more public facing. And I think part of that is more people using Apple computers than ever before, more people using Apple products than ever before. And I think another piece of this is, like you were saying, most people, at least, like in our circles, the people, the people in my phone, the contacts that I have are people who are also their own family's tech support. And
right.
it's been long enough now that that we've spent all this time training people. Like, if it says you can get the system upgrade, it doesn't cost you anything. All you really have to do is restart. It'll be fine. And we finally trained people to go ahead and take the leap. And then they do, and then they run into a bug. They have this, what really seems to be a widespread Wi-Fi issue in Yosemite. Or they run into some other, reasonably common bug just based on what I've seen on Twitter that's been going by. I'm beating my head against this thing that happened to my mom's computer or whatever. And I think part of it is just the convergence of iOS 8 still having issues when it came out. People going, oh my God, this is the beta that went gold. Like, do you know? I mean, I still have in iOS 8, if I pull down to search on my iPad, it won't search in landscape. It only searches in portrait. So I'm holding it sideways. Everything is sideways. And when I pull down from the long side of the screen, pull down to search, it pops up the keyboard on the side, on the short end. And it does this very consistently. And it's really frustrating. And, you finally train people after long enough to go, it'll be okay. Everything works. It came from Apple. It'll be all right. And now, you're kind of up a creek because of this. So that's kind of an issue. But I think also, like I said, it's iOS 8 was kind of rough. Like, we had a lot of problems getting people on 7, let's be honest. And then mm-hmm. But at least it seemed reasonably solid. And then with 8, we had more hand wavers than normal going, don't do this on a 4S. And then we had a bunch of stuff that was supposed to work that all of a sudden quit working if you upgraded in iOS 8 because you couldn't do it in Yosemite yet because there was no Yosemite yet. And, like, all of these sort of little speed bumps, like, taken together, I think is the thing that, like, people's fundamental faith maybe has dropped a notch. Now, does this mean I want a Windows computer? Oh, my God, no. Because I have one, and we have an adversarial relationship at best. Because every time I open it, it says there are 200 updates I need to install, and I get grumpy, and then I forget what I needed it for, and then I forget why do I ever need this stupid thing, and yeah, we have words. I get way more frustrated with other stuff, and I think part of the reason that this... I know this got misconstrued because people who were doing most of the misconstruing were not people who generally hang out with this community on a regular basis. And so what they're not hearing in it is what Marco is saying or what anybody else is saying. Like, this is the kind of stuff I've said, you know, a number of times when things maybe haven't gone as smooth as they should with an Apple product. And that is, you know, I want it to be better. I want it to be the experience it used to be. I want it to be... you know, when you went from OS 8 to OS 8.5, you know, on your computer, back when there was an OS 8, when you went from 8 to 8.5 or 8.5 to 9, like, there was an investment of time, but it was because you had to swap all those floppies out. But you were able to get, you know, you didn't have to worry about doing it as long as you knew all of your software was compatible. And that was really the problem. It wasn't what bug is going to get introduced, what new hurdle will I face in my workflow if I make this leap. It was never that. And we got used to sort of having to do the sanity check for, okay, I'm going from 10.3 to 10.4. So does Photoshop work? Does Illustrator work? Does PageMaker work? Does Office work? Mm-hmm. Okay, I can go. You know, now I can go ahead and pull the trigger on that. And it wasn't a big deal. And it didn't used to be the hurdles, you know, there wasn't always a hurdle like there is now. And I think that that's probably part of what it is just, I want it to be better because I feel like Apple is the best and, you know, I want the best to be way further ahead than what it is now. And it's kind of, I think that's what it is it's that thing you hear from your parents that you hate. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. I think that's what we've come to.
Yeah.
With
I'm
all
more,
of this.
More in sorrow than in anger. Well, and there's some really interesting, There's a really interesting point in one of the threads on Glenn's post, and that's one of the reasons I've cited it because I think the level of informative discourse is higher. But it's the notion that for super users, for sophisticated users, developers, IT professionals, for people who know the system, is that, and this is a point from a guy named Brad Moore, is that there used to be a lot of – there were always crazy cargo cult solutions, he says, for past problems. But these days it seems like they're the only solutions out there and there aren't – no one is able to figure out exactly what's going on. The fact that we're practically forced to be mystical thinkers about these inscrutable systems, he says, is most galling to developers and savvy users, the very same group that seems to be at the forefront of this wave of discontent. And I will say – That is a point where Windows users, maybe not Windows 7 users, but historical Windows users and particularly Linux users will say, gotcha. You bought into this ecosystem where Apple made a bargain with its users and said, we are going to hide this complexity from you. And in return, we promise you that it's just going to work.
Right.
And we are going to take the knobs off the control panel. We're going to tape over all these, you know, these ports. Now, on the Mac, and in fact, truly still on iOS, you have a very pokeable Unix underpinning. You have you have a Unix subsystem there that you can work with.
Right.
But more as the platform has moved more into the cloud, as Apple's services part of the solution suite has become more important, then there is nothing I can do to my Mac or even to my jailbroken iPhone that is going to make iTunes Match do what it's supposed to do.
none of it's going to make iTunes better.
Like, it's not going to make iTunes Match work. It's not going to make the App Store work. It's not going to make
me back my sidebar in iTunes 12.
Right, or back to my Mac, or all this stuff. So
iTunes in my list of things that Apple has done that have made people really angry lately. But yeah, iTunes 12 was totally one of those. So yeah.
And
I'm with you on that, and that was exactly what I started wondering when we got a good look at Lion for the first time. I remember on the Tua Talk cast saying, are we going to reach a point where I have to jailbreak my computer? Because what I used to do was the new version of the OS would come out, and the little checkbox that I used to have went away. And so I'd wait a week or two, and then I would go Google that thing, and I would go find the default write command that made it what I wanted. You know, but you couldn't just go check the box for it anymore. You had to go bust out the terminal and get something done. And then I would go, and then I, you know, filed that away somewhere. And then when I moved to the next version of the operating system, when I lost my option, I would go, oh, yeah, I have to go default write that. And I had this little list of things that every time I upgraded my operating system, I had to go default write 5 or 10 things just to make sure that I was getting the functionality out of it I wanted. And there used to be default write for those things. And now if I go Google, you know, thingamastuff default write, I don't get the answers like I used to be able to. And I think that that's part of the problem that people like us are having. If you're a super duper power user and this is a thing that you know, is hindering your workflow in some way because, you know, I mean, look at the phone, for example. You don't need a file system. And there's a little Jedi hand wave motion that goes with that. You don't need to see the file system. I don't need to see the file system. You know, move along. that's how iOS is totally set up. So, you know, when I saw that, you know, folks like Dropbox were getting in on the mobile game, when I saw Panic drop Transmit for mobile, like, that was super exciting to me because it gives you the opportunity to sort of manage your stuff. And not everybody needs to do that. My mom's never going to need an FTP client on her phone. But to me, it's great because I need it for a variety of other things, because I'm doing a whole heck of a lot more with my phone than my mom is, or than my brother is, or than other people are, you know, and having that opportunity available, because, you know, this was one of the things that sort of helped kick the door in on getting any sort of Apple product in the enterprise, was being able to walk in with your phone and go, I can VPN with my phone. I can, you know, I have a terminal client also from Panic. I can do all these things. You know, I can log into the server over VPN on my phone. I have Secure Exchange. I have, you know, passcode protection so that I can wipe my phone if it ever disappears. Like, let me hook up my work stuff to this because I can do everything I need to do no matter where I am. You know, and people, I think some faith has been shaken. And I think it's definitely a conversation to have, but it needs to be a conversation and not somebody coming out with sort of like, this is my stance, this is what I feel like right now, and then everybody else running around with their hair on fire.
Yeah. And that's what the problem is that there's a lot of hair fire running about at the moment and not so much light. We will revisit this, I imagine, next week. When we speak again, when we do the next show, we are our commitment to you, the listener. Yes, you, the listener, is we're going to get regular. We're going to take our podcast fiber. We're going to be a little bit more. 2015 is going to be the year of regularity for the after show. So we are going to be back with you within the next 7 to 10 days. And where can the people find us, Kelly?
Well, if you look behind, if you go up here and take a left at Costco. Okay. So, you can find me over at the Mac Observer, where I write at macobserver.com. You can apparently find some of my more clever NBA related tweets during Blazer games over on the Blazers television post game show, which was kind of exciting. You can also find me on the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast and at the British Tech Network on a couple of their shows. And you can find me on Twitter as Verso, which you should totally do because I will be spending more time on Twitter in the future.
Excellent. And you can find me at Mike T. Rose on Twitter. You can find me occasionally at the unofficial Apple weblog, tuaw.com. And you can find the both of us at aftershowpodcast.com. That is our website for the show, aftershowpodcast, all one word, .com. Mm-hmm. And our Twitter account for the show is the_aftershow.
Yeah.
So we will be back with you very, very shortly. In the meantime, Kelly, thanks for coming on tonight.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for getting it together tonight so we could get all this done.
That's just the way we roll here. So go Blazers. Enjoy the rest of the Golden Globes, everybody. We will be back soon. Thank you for joining us on The After Show for this lovely January evening. We'll see you soon.